The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with the Reader's Digest food for thought. Bubble tea blows up. I've never had bubble tea. When bubble tea was first introduced in the United States about 30 years ago, you could get it only in mom-and-pop shops in Big City, Chinatown, and Koreatown. Now it's popping up in cafes around the country. Baskin-Robbins even offered a version of it this spring and summer. Classic bubble tea is black tea brewed with milk and sugar, then poured over ice and tapioca pearls, also known as balls or boba. Bubble tea is often called boba, and served with an oversized straw so you can slurp a pearl or two with each sip. Made from tapioca starch extracted from the cassava root, these marble-sized pearls traditionally are boiled and caramelized in brown sugar syrup, giving them their dark color and sweet flavor. Just take care not to swallow the pearls whole. They're meant to be chewed and savored. On most bubble tea menus, you'll find an array of options for the tea itself, including green, matcha, jasmine, chai, and even fruity herbal varieties. Some favorites in Asia are lychee, white peach, and taro, which has a nutty vanilla flavor. You can then top your tea with flavored jellies, fruit, ice cream, custard, and mochi, a sweet Japanese rice cake, to make it even more indulgent. Several Taiwanese tea houses claim to be the birthplace of bubble tea, although Chun Shu Tang in Taichung has perhaps the most perpetuated origin story. Its owner started serving chilled tea in the early 1980s after seeing coffee served cold in Japan. A few years later, a staffer poured tapioca balls straight into her cup, and the fantastic fusion was born. Whether or not this was truly the case, bubble tea has a relatively short history, despite the fact that drinking milky tea and eating starchy desserts are both long-standing Southeast Asian traditions. Some shops use a machine to seal the cup with cellophane, so it's easy to tote around without spilling. But the process doesn't have to be so high-tech. You can even make double tea at home. In fact, you likely already have all the ingredients minus the tapioca pearls, which you can make yourself, although it's far easier to buy them online or from an Asian grocery store. While you're there, also pick up some fat straws, slurp, and enjoy. How to make it? Start with 1 cup of tapioca pearls, enough for 2 to 4 servings of bubble tea. Boil 3 cups of water. Cook pearls until they float. Then keep them on the heat for about a minute more. Rinse pools in cool water and drain, and put them in a jar with some simple syrup. Next, brew the tea, letting it steep a little longer than if you plan to drink it plain. Sweeten to taste, and then chill. Place pearls in a tall glass, fill 2/3 of the way with tea, then top with your favorite milk. Stir with a straw, and sip. Sounds interesting? 13 Things, a celebration of 100 birthdays. Number 1. This little magazine just celebrated a big birthday. Our February issue marked a century of circulation, as did my Lions Club, by the way. We want to feed our fellow centenarians, such as Newbery Medal, with honors outstanding children's literature. The first winner, The Story of Mankind by Hendrik Wilhelm von Loon. Number 2. If you happen to have a Jaguar with Bell tires and insure your car with State Farm, then your road trips are sponsored by 100-year-old companies. The United States Automobile Association, or USAA, which serves those in the Miller community, was also founded in 1922. Oh, that's my insurance company. The original members were 25 Army officers who all insured one another's vehicles. Number 3. A century ago, the New York City radio station WEAF aired the first ever radio commercial, a whopping 15-minute-long real estate ad for available properties in Queens. Later that year, the BBC was formed, and the popularity of this new medium of radio helped usher the word broadcast into the dictionary. Number 4. Other words that got official entries into the 1922 include bypass, as in the road, sidecar, as in the cocktail, tracksuit, and polyester. Eyeshadow was also added that year, even though it's been worn since the time of ancient Egypt. Egypt also formally gained its independence in 1922. Number 5. The blender was born 100 years ago. Its inventor, Stephen Popolowski, a Polish immigrant to Racine, Wisconsin, also the home of Horlick's Malted Milk, Popolowski's blender helped make the modern milkshake possible. In fact, the first shake made with ice cream came together at Chicago Walgreens in the summer of 1922. Number 6. America's first chocolate-covered ice cream bar, the Eskimo Pie, renamed Eddie's Pie in 2021, was patented in 1922. Creator Christian Kent Nelson partnered with chocolatier Russell Stover on the treat. Then the pair sold the manufacturing rights to a few ice cream companies in Iowa. They were an instant hit, as the first 250,000 bars sold out within 24 hours. Number 7. Gummy bears are also a century-old sweet. They were invented in Germany, where Gummibär translates to rubber bear, by Hans Riegel and his candy company Haribo. To celebrate, the confectionery giant is offering special edition bags all year with blue raspberry-flavored party hats as well as single-flavored bags, a longtime fan request. Number 8. The first example of skywriting in the United States happened in May 1922, when Royal Air Force Captain Cyril Turner wrote "Hello, USA" over New York City. The following day, he took to the skies again to write "Call Vanderbilt 7200," referencing the hotel where he was staying. Over the next few hours, the hotel received 47,000 calls. Number 9. Water ski was invented 100 years ago by a daring Minnesota teenager named Ralph Samuelson, who held onto the clothesline while his brother Ben towed him toward behind a boat in Lake Pepin. Samuelson then spent years developing his own water skiing equipment, but never patented any of it, so he never likely saw any money for it. Number 10. Rose Bowl Stadium in Pasadena, California, opened in late 1922 and has hosted the New Year's Day tradition every year since, with only two exceptions, the first in 1942 due to fears of another Japanese attack falling Pearl Harbor, and again in 2021 due to the COVID-19 restrictions. Center Court at Wilmington opened for matches in June 1922. 11. Professional women's soccer has also had 100 years of history in the United States, sparked by a British ban on the sport. The English Football Association declared soccer ultimately unladylike in 1921. So in 1922, one of the United Kingdom's best women's teams came to play in America against men. Although the athletes finished their 9-game series in the States with 3 wins, 3 losses, and 3 draws, they left with something of a trophy, a soccer ball signed by President Warren G. Harding. Number 12. The Lincoln Memorial celebrated its centennial in May. After all this time, several false notions about the monument persist. Some say, for instance, there's a face on the back of Lincoln's head. This is merely a fanciful interpretation of his hair. Others claim there's a typo in his second inaugural address on the north wall of the memorial. While the engraver did initially carve a wrong letter, the mistake was corrected almost immediately. Number 13. A few beloved characters turn 100 this year. Smitty, the office boy from the eponymous comic strip that ran for 50 years in newspapers, hundreds of newspapers, Walt Disney's Julius the Cat, and the kids' classic The Velveteen Rabbit. The little plush bunny who came to life reminds us that in order to be real, you must first be loved. And for 100 years, our readers have made us feel, at the RD, feel very real. Are you as good as your word? In a survey of nearly 2,000 Americans, 58% of respondents admitted that they've used a word to try to sound smarter, despite not knowing what it means. How about a little all-in-a-day's work? School administrators frowned upon bus drivers letting our students off before 8:15 a.m. But one day, and a little after 8, it began to rain, and a concerned driver announced over her radio, "I'm letting my kids off now so they can get into school dry." A fellow driver agreed, "Good idea. They smell even worse when they're wet." I opened an envelope from one of our customers regarding an accidental life insurance policy on her spouse. The request was simple and to the point. Had written boldly across the invoice in red ink, it read, "Please cancel this policy. My husband is dead, and it was no accident." Vacation's over. Back to work. After taking a week of vacation, I like to slowly ease back into my workload. This is a process typically takes about 51 weeks. I wrote up a to-do list of things for when I'm back from vacation. It was so long I gasped and wrote "write to-do list" at the top so I could cross one thing off. Listen to me if you haven't returned from vacation yet. Do not return. Stay there, wherever you are. Keep that 000 up. It's too late for me, but save yourselves. We have plumbers working in our house. I just heard one of them say, "Lefty loosely, righty tightly." I know we're in good hands. The message exchanged between reporter Doug Wolf of WAND-TV in Decatur, Illinois, and a local viewer. Viewer, can you please tell me if the interstate is safe to drive? Wolf, IDOT is asking everyone to stay off interstate unless absolutely necessary. Viewer, why call me an idiot? I was asking because a friend is taking that road to work. Wolf, IDOT stands for Illinois Department of Transportation. While volunteering in a hospital during college, I was tasked with feeding an elderly patient who didn't have the strength to do it himself. When his tray arrived, I picked it up the utensils and asked, would you like me to use a spoon or a fork? He replied, that depends on your aim. That was from Sandy Spear. Sounds like a nice young lady. And here's some back-to-work bingo. Now, imagine a bingo card with, it looks like, let's see, 16 squares on it. I'm sorry, 20 squares on it. The very center is a chocolate-covered donut with a bite-out. And these are the things that you have to get the bingo. Ask for the Wi-Fi password. Think, not say, I thought you'd be tall. Find a desiccated spider in your desk. Realize that real life has no mute button. I didn't recognize you with a mask on. Pretend to have text to avoid hallway small talk. Is this food, drink, medicine still good? Buy fancy leggings or sweatpants. How do I call IT again? Google your office building's address. RIP potted plant. Office crush is no longer attractive. Eat stale celebratory donuts. Introvert realizes they like people after all. Did you get COVID? I got COVID. Wow, that coworker chews loudly. Zoom meeting in your cube. Reunite with favorite printer, which then, of course, jams. It feels as if we never left. Wonder if bottled water expires. Enter the wrong restroom. 2020 hand sanitizer has evaporated. Temporary nostalgia for commute. Extrovert realizes they like being home alone. The Healthy Wellness from Healthy.com. Beyond burnout. What do you do when, or eyelid before, stress reaches epic proportions? America is seriously stressed out. According to the American Institute of Stress, even before the pandemic, 94% of workers said they regularly felt stressed. And more recently, the American Psychological Association reported that the country's collective stress had reached the alarming levels. We all get busy sometimes, but feeling constantly and chronically swamped, worried, and overwhelmed can lead to burnout, which can have serious consequences. That kind of burnout and stress is taken to another level. Typically, burnout is defined as an extreme state of psychological strain, says Young Ah Park, an associate professor at the School of Labor and Employment Relations at the University of Illinois. It's a response to facing prolonged chronic stressors that go beyond your ability or available resources to overcome. Because so many of us frequently feel stressed, it can be hard to recognize when the line has been crossed. True burnout is different from feeling overextended. Michael Leder, a professor of psychology at Acadia University in Nova Scotia, explains, burnout combines three key dimensions, overwhelming exhaustion, feelings of cynicism, and a sense of discouragement, inadequacy, or low accomplishment. Feeling exhausted when you begin working is a red flag. This is a sign that demands are building faster than you can recover from them, he says. That fatigue evolves into feelings such as pessimism and withdrawal, becoming grumpy and cynical about work you used to love, especially feeling that way toward people you're supposed to care about. And that's the end stage of burnout. But it takes a while to get there. At first, we might find ourselves experiencing hyperactivity, trying to manage our stressors by frantically working to reduce them, and juggling more and more simultaneously, says Emily Basilides, Ph.D., an associate professor of psychology at New York University. Unfortunately, this desperation can contribute to making mistakes, losing concentration, or even starting to feel emotionally unhinged, all of which can pave the way for more chronic issues to develop. Living at burnout level of sustained stress can lead to serious health consequences, including problematic sleep patterns, digestion woes, and even greater risk for depression, heart problems, diabetes, and weight gain, according to Basilides. Perhaps the most frightening, a study published in the Journal of Psychosomatic Research found that people who experience chronic burnout have up to 35% greater risk of early mortality. Before the stress in your life ramps up to that level, know that experts say there are proactive steps you can take to prevent burnout. Look for meaning at work. We can tolerate stress longer if we believe we're doing something purposeful and worthwhile. Basilides says we're more likely to experience chronic burnout inducing stress. Chronic burnout inducing stress when something seems out of our control, against our will, or totally meaningless. Try to identify ways in which even the smallest of your daily tasks contribute to the lives of others. Take stock of what's on your plate. If you can cut or outsource one or two of those things that you don't personally give you meaning, look for meaning outside of work. If you're struggling to make your work meaningful, prioritizing life outside work might be especially beneficial. Research published in the BMC Medicine shows that people are more likely to experience a greater sense of engagement when on the job are those with a hobby. The ultimate burnout buffer. Try to separate work and home life, home and outside life. With boundaries blurring between work and non-work these days, research has suggested that there are some tactics individuals can use. Park suggests that turning off the work email notifications on your phone, using separate email accounts for work and for personal life, setting up boundaries, physical and temporal, between work and personal life, especially if you work from home. Don't neglect yourself. Neglecting your diet or eating fast foods or comfort foods can become a way of dealing with stress, but it will rob your body and brain of nutrients necessary to facilitate energy and regulate moods, says Benjamin Maxim, AMFT, a family therapist in Orange County, California. Physical activity is essential to shaking out stress hormones, too. Many individuals are less active when under stress than in order to rest. But movement is the most natural evolutionary response to our body's stress. While you don't have to run away from a mountain lion these days, even light movement helps complete the stress cycle, flushing stress hormones out of the bloodstream. Recognize when it has become too much. Talk to your supervisors when you feel that your job would be more manageable, rewarding, or under your control. It's very common for superiors to continue to increase tasks over time, Maxson says, adding that if we don't communicate our needs or limitations, they may look overlooked. But if you don't expect things will improve, consider changing jobs or even careers. For Nurse Wendy Reynolds, director of a hospital intensive care unit in Pennsylvania, stress had always been part of the job. Then the pandemic hit, and the stress ramped up to a whole new level. I wasn't sleeping, always had a headache, and was always anxious and worried about everything, she says. I knew I needed to leave. She realized the ICU had become too much for her, and the stress and long hours weren't fair to her family, either. She solved her burnout problem by transitioning into a healthcare administration role, where she can manage her work-life balance while still having a career that aligns with her passion for clinical healthcare. I love my new job, she says. I actually see my family now, and I can use my clinical skills to help leaders at other hospitals improve workflows on their staff, so it's very rewarding. If you do feel burned out, therapy can help you process work-related stress and learn coping strategies, and it can teach you to communicate with your employer and set healthy boundaries. Maxson says cognitive behavior therapy is especially effective for dealing with workplace burnout. Sleep apps for insomnia. As someone living with fibromyalgia and psoriatic arthritis, I often struggle to fall asleep. Nighttime stretches and white noise machines rarely help, so I decided to try some sleep apps. The one that worked best was Aura. That's A-U-R-A. It offers bedtime stories, soothing sounds, meditations, insights from psychologists, even hypnosis, not just for sleep, but for well-being all day long. It also has personalized suggestions based on information I shared, such as how long it takes me to drift off. By the end of the week-long free trial, I was falling asleep peacefully, which made the $60 annual fee seem worth the investment. That's interesting. Forget those crazy skincare trends. In contrast to some of the rejuvenating skincare trends out there, vampire facials, bee venom serums, dermatologists consider Trinitine the gold standard for keeping skin smooth and glowing. This is T-R-E-T-I-N-O-I-N. Tretinoin is a vitamin A derivative called a retinoid. It was originally studied in the 1960s to treat keratotic disorders, conditions that cause the skin to become thick and painful. Research recognized that tretinoin also works to fight acne and started prescribing it in the 1970s. By the 1980s, people were using it to treat fine lines, wrinkles, and sun damage. Tretinoin is still available only by prescription in topical creams and goods sold under the brand names such as Retin-A, Renova, and Avita. Brooke Drassen, MD, a board-certified dermatologist in Durham, North Carolina, hey, I know there, I live there, said tretinoin works as an exfoliant, irritating skin to speed up natural cell turnover. As your skin cells turn over faster, the dull, dry, damaged skin will be replaced by brand new skin cells, she says. Tretinoin can also regulate, I wish I knew how to pronounce that, it's T-R-E-T-I-N-O-I-N, Tretinoin, I guess, can also regulate the genes involved in the collagen production, says Tanya Comrelli, MD, a board-certified dermatologist in Santa Monica, California. Collagen is essential for skin firmness and elasticity, but we produce less of it as we age. Tretinoin can enter skin cells and switch on the genes responsible for collagen production. Retinol, a less potent retinoid found in many over-the-counter anti-aging creams and serums, is available without a prescription. But retinol doesn't have the same powerful effect on the skin that tretinoin does. Retinol is less effective at turning on the collagen genes, says Dr. Carmelli. Dermatologists say that most people can start using tretinoin for skin rejuvenation long before wrinkles appear. However, it's not recommended for pregnant women and those with ultra-sensitive skin, and it takes several months of regular use before you'll see any results. News from the world of medicine. And there's a picture of a globe with an ice pack on top of it, tied with a white ribbon. A German study of migraine sufferers found that weekly sessions of mindfulness-based cognitive therapy reduced the frequency of their headaches by 40%. This may be due to the therapy's psychological benefits, decreased stress, anxiety, rumination, and catastrophizing, which removed potential migraine triggers. Why it's okay to forget sometimes. Forgetting things can be frustrating or even worrying, but it might actually be good for our brains. Based on preclinical trials, researchers at Trinity College Dublin and the University of Toronto proposed that forgetting is something the brain does to prune clutter. On the flip side, their research suggests that buried memories can be brought back even in people with amnesia. If further study supports these findings, more serious memory loss could be treated. Also, a new German study shows that cognitive processing speed generally begins to change after 60. In the study, older participants took longer to settle on the decisions, but mainly because they were more careful to avoid making mistakes, which, of course, is a smart thing if you want to make better choices. Another reason to take vitamin D supplements. A study at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Massachusetts found that taking 2,000 IU of vitamin D3 every day for 2 years lowered the risk of developing autoimmune diseases by more than 20%. Physicians may soon recommend a daily dose for people in their 50s. Good news about HIV prevention. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration recently approved an injectable drug called Apretude that can help prevent 1.5 million HIV cases contracted globally each year. The shot, given every 8 weeks, is 70% more effective in lowering HIV risk than Truvada, the pill commonly used now. Olive oil could add years to your life. A Mediterranean diet is known to be heart healthy, and a new Harvard study found that on consuming just a small amount of olive oil every day lowers your risk of dying from a variety of ailments. Researchers allowed 90,000 Americans for 28 years and found those who consumed a half tablespoon of olive oil daily had a lower risk of death from cancer by 17%, respiratory disease by 18%, heart disease by 19%, and neurodegenerative diseases such as dementia by 29%. Whether taken straight from the bottle or used in cooking, olive oil has an anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties that contribute to overall health, as does replacing other artery-clogging fats. Implant helps patients walk again. A small Swiss study has accomplished the incredible. After electrical stimulation of the spinal cords, 3 men paralyzed from the waist down following a motorcycle accident were able to stand, walk, swim, and cycle again. The patients had a device surgically implanted that sends electrical stimulation into the spinal cord. Within days, each participant could take as many as 300 steps using a walker for support, and even farther with practice. If similar large-scale trials underway in the United States and Europe are successful, The device could be permanently implanted into paralyzed patients who would use their smartphones to adjust the level of stimulation needed for various activities. Wow, isn't that fantastic? Okay, let's have a little, some more giggles here that we've got a fair amount of those in this edition. And this is life in these United States. Forget about endless school concerts. The worst part of the school year is the morning drop-off. The commute to school is only 3 minutes, but the wait in the drop-off line is 3 to 4 business days. My husband is helping me relax by taking the kids to school in the morning. We went over the drop-off procedures 37 times, and he just left without one of the kids. Me at the school drop-off. Have a good day, my 6-year-old. You can't make me. I've never meditated. The close I've come to thinking about nothing for 30 minutes is the time my husband talked about his fantasy football league. I'm supposed to give my wife an injection today, but she's worried because she's seen many struggles with Capri Sun straws. I know those. I have had those problems, too. Ah, the joys of parenthood. My 6-year-old to her crying brother, it's okay to be sad. Sometimes we need to let our feelings out. Just let yourself be sad. Me. Oh, darling, that's so lovely. Well done. Why is he crying anyway? My 6-year-old. I hit him. Oh, my 3-year-old, pumping all of our hand soap into the bathroom sink, all the while chanting, wasting soap, to himself. 6. So you never get taller? Nope, I can't grow taller. Only fatter, right? Me. Yes, you were in my belly. My 3-year-old with tears in her eyes. Why? Why did you eat me? You may be tough, but you're not. You may be tough, but you're not. Just sat through a 4th grade recorder concert. Tough. That is tough. And with that, let's switch over to Consumer Reports. What's really in your insect repellent? DEET? Picaridin? Oil of lemon eucalyptus? What are these things anyway? Where do they come from? Which works best? And which are safe? Here's what we found after years of testing and hundreds of bites. Scientists are always looking for better ways to foil bugs that leave itchy welts in their wake. Despite many tools being studied, from tick-killing fungus to genetically modified mosquitoes, bug repellent is still the first line of defense, says Mustafa Debon, Ph.D., a medical and veterinary entomologist. It's a personal protection measure that any individual can take into their own hands. It's an important one, too. In the U.S., the mosquito-borne West Nile virus is thought to have infected nearly 7 million people since it first appeared in New York in 1999. Every year, close to 500,000 people get Lyme disease after a tick bite. But not all repellents provide equal protection, which is why CR tests how well each one blocks real bugs from biting real people. Our brave participants place repellent-covered arms inside cages filled with 200 disease-free mosquitoes. Ouch. Then we measure how long it takes for the bugs to start biting. And it turns out that what matters most is not the brand or type of repellent, spray, lotion, or wipe, but the active ingredient and its concentration. The list of products we recommend changes slightly from year to year, but insect repellents whose active ingredient is DEET at concentrations of 25 to 30% reliably earn our recommendation, as do many, but not all, 15% DEET sprays. We also found that some, but again not all, repellents with 30% oil of lemon eucalyptus and 20% picaridin provide long-lasting protection. But what exactly are these ingredients, and why do some products work better than others with the same active ingredients? Here are the answers to those questions and more. What's so great about DEET? By the way, in case you know, DEET is spelled D-E-E-T. When it comes to active ingredients that can ward off bugs, it's hard to beat DEET. It's broad spectrum, meaning it works on a wide variety of bugs, including mosquitoes, ticks, and flies. When scientists are testing the effectiveness of new insect repellent ingredients, they compare them to DEET to see how they measure up. DEET was discovered in the 1940s essentially by brute force, as Masmer De Janeiro, Ph.D., an associate professor in the Department of Biological Sciences at Florida International University, puts it. The U.S. military and the Department of Agriculture jointly screened more than 6,000 different compounds looking for ones that would repel mosquitoes. A chemical closely related to DEET was found to be highly effective, then refined slightly to reduce its tendency to irritate the skin. Thus, N-N-N-diethylmetatautamide, or DEET, was born, and eventually registered for use in consumer products in 1957. Though scientists found out long ago that DEET works, they still don't know exactly why. Theories abound. DEET may mask the odor of humans, confuse the odor-sensing abilities of mosquitoes, or simply compel them to move away, perhaps because it resembles a natural substance they have evolved to avoid. But it may be more than just odor at work. Even mosquitoes bred without the ability to sense the smell of DEET appear to sense the chemical with their legs when they land on it and fly away without biting. According to a 2019 study published in the Journal of Current Biology, it's also possible that DEET is so effective against mosquitoes because it's working on more than one and maybe several levels at the same time, says Chris Potter, Ph.D., an associate professor of neuroscience at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, who specializes in insects' sense of smell. Why DEET also repels ticks is even less understood, even though the mechanisms are likely different than the mosquitoes. Ticks don't have the same odor-sensing body parts as mosquitoes, and instead they have a sensory mechanism unique to ticks called Haller's organ, which we still know very little about, according to Brian Cassone, Ph.D., an associate professor of biology at Brandon University in Manitoba, Canada. But scientists think it's the main way ticks sense their surroundings. One thing we do know, ticks, which generally hitch a ride as you pass them by in brush or tall grasses, are less likely to attach themselves to your skin if they sense DEET, and they'll avoid spots on your skin where DEET is. That's one reason why it's important to apply repellent carefully to all exposed skin when you want to avoid ticks, Cassone says. Okay, DEET works, but is it safe? DEET has been available to consumers for more than 60 years, and it's estimated that people use millions of times each year. In all that time, scientists have found only a few cases of harm potentially linked to it. A 1998 Environmental Protection Agency analysis investigating health effects of DEET, for example, found that since 1960, the estimated incidence of seizures with possible connection to DEET exposure was 1 per 100 million users. A 2007 EPA chemical summary report on DEET reported that many of those instances of adverse serological effects were linked with ingestion of repeated dermal exposure or accidental ingestion of DEET that were not consistent with label directions. And in other words, DEET may pose some risk if it's ingested or used improperly. Keep repellents well out of kids' reach. And high concentrations aren't necessary. CRT repellents in concentrations only up to 30%. More than that just isn't needed for long-lasting protection. When you use DEET power repellent as directed, it poses very little risk. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommend it as a safe option for adults, children older than 2 months, and even people who are pregnant. Still, no chemicals without risk, and DEET needs to be used properly in order to be safe. According to the National Pesticide Information Center, NPIC, you should avoid applying DEET underneath your clothes. Use it only on exposed skin and on the outside clothing. Wash it off your skin at the end of the day and try not to reapply it too frequently. Neglecting those tips could lead you to getting higher dose than DEET than intended. Plus, DEET can degrade certain synthetic materials like plastic, so it shouldn't be applied to some types of clothing. You may also be worried about long-term risk of exposure to DEET. According to a 2008 fact sheet by the MPIC, researchers have not found any evidence that DEET causes cancer in animals or humans, and there's no clear evidence of other long-term risk of topical use, despite the availability of DEET for decades. What are Ole and Picaridin? That's P-I-C-A-R-I-D-I-N, Picaridin. OLE was brought to the attention of U.S. scientists in the 1990s when they learned that a Chinese product called Kueleng was repelling mosquitoes much better than other plant-based products. One of its major components is the chemical p-methane-3.8-diol, or PMD, which gives OLE its repellency. The name oil of lemon eucalyptus is something of a misnomer. The Asturian plant it comes from, Coriamba citrata, or lemon-scented gum, is used to be considered part of the eucalyptus genus, but it isn't anymore. And unlike lemon eucalyptus oil, OLE isn't a true essential oil because it's refined and concentrated. In short, it's not exactly what it sounds like, although it is indeed a naturally derived ingredient that's often very effective. Picaridin is called Icaridin, is a chemical that was developed by Bayer AG in the 1980s and 1990s. Its structure is similar to piperidine, a chemical that occurs naturally in certain pepper plants. It's been available in the U.S. consumers since 2005 and is especially popular as an insect repellent in Europe and Australia. Are OLE and picaridin safe? Compared with DEET, less is known about OLE and picaridin, but evidence suggests that they're safe when used according to the label. OLE is classified as a biopesticide by the EPA, which means it's naturally occurring substance considered to be lower risk than more conventional pest control chemicals. The main risk appears that it can be harmful if it gets in your eyes. It also shouldn't be used on children younger than 3. Its safety has not been well studied in young children. Picaridin carries a small risk of skin irritation, but this appears to be rare. Any possible long-term effects of these two ingredients have largely been unstudied. Why do repellents with the same active ingredient sometimes perform differently? Our testing can't tell us why some repellents with the same label active ingredients last for a long time while others don't. In part, that's because unlike with cosmetics or other personal care products, manufacturers of EPA-registered repellents aren't required to disclose all of the ingredients. It could be that some of the non-active ingredients in a given repellent are affecting how well they perform. Academic researchers are limited in their ability to study commercial insect repellent formulations, says Zayn Syed, PhD, an associate professor in the Department of Entomology at the University of Kentucky. Manufacturers are reluctant to provide their formulas to researchers for testing. They consider them to be a trade secret, so independent scientific study of insect repellents can't test how a repellent's non-active ingredients may be contributed to its efficacy. That's one advantage of CR's insect repellent testing. We perform our tests with the same products that you buy on the store shelves. So even though we don't know all of the ingredients in a product, we can see how well it works in comparison with other products on the market. Now here are a couple inserts on this particular article. Tips for applying repellent. Apply bug spray to exposed skin and clothes. Never apply it under your clothing because it could cause skin irritation. Before spraying on clothes, test it out on a small piece of fabric to make sure it won't cause damage. Leave no spots unsprayed. Mosquitoes and ticks are good at finding unprotected skin. To protect your face and to apply repellents to children, free spray your hands, then rub it on your face or on your child. A thin film of repellent is sufficient. Wash your hands after applying. Avoid getting any repellent in your mouth and eyes. Check the product label for its suggested time frame, which may range anywhere from 2 to 8 hours. A good guideline is to reapply it when you notice mosquitoes are biting again, but some repellents may have limits on a maximum number of applications per day, so reading the label for additional guidance is a serious issue. Why natural repellents don't work quite as well? The bottom rungs of CR insect repellent ratings are filled mostly with so-called natural insect repellents, meaning those whose active ingredients are essential oils. Lemongrass oil, cedarwood oil, and citronella oil, and peppermint oil are among the most common ingredients. It's not that these ingredients don't work. After all, they have come from plants that have been repelling insects for millions of years, says Joel Coates, Ph.D., a distinguished professor emeritus of entomology and toxicology at Iowa State University. But there's a problem. The molecules that make up many of these essential oils, known as terpenes, are small and light. So although they're very effective repellents, according to Coates, they evaporate quickly from the skin, which means they don't last very long, sometimes for only an hour. Also, the quality or potency of essential oils is highly variable and unpredictable, says Aaron Gross, Ph.D., an assistant professor of toxicology and physiology in the Department of Entomology at Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University. And while essential oils might seem safer, some people can be hypersensitive or even allergic to them. Research is ongoing to discover or develop plant-based repellents that will evaporate less quickly, and a few more effective plant-based repellents are already on the market. PND, which gives oil of lemon eucalyptus, OLE, its potency, is a terpene-like compound. So is a tomato-derived active ingredient, 2 under Canone, which, like OLE, is registered with the EPA as an effective repellent ingredient. It's hard to find products with this ingredient on the U.S. market, and Consumer Reports doesn't have one in our ratings. There's also a new active ingredient called Nucatone. That's N-O-O-T-K-A-T-O-N-E, which is derived from grapefruit skin and Alaska yellow cedar trees. It was registered with the EPA in 2020 and is what's called a sesquiterpene, a heavier terpene molecule. It's so new, in fact, that there aren't any commercial insect repellents on the market that contain it yet. The EPA's data suggests it could have good efficiency against biting bugs. How the naturals stack up. Baby Organic's natural insect repellent for $10 scored a 12. Greener Way's organic bug repellent at $9 got a 7. And Hello Bello mosquito repellent at $8 got a 4. The rise of Lyme. In the U.S., the range of black-legged tick, which transmits Lyme disease, has grown over the past two decades, due in part to changing climate, increased suburbanization, reforestation in the Northeast, and other reasons. Early symptoms of Lyme often include a bullseye rash in 70-80% of cases, and a fever. Untreated symptoms can progress to arthritis, nerve pain, and heart palpitations. Today, cases of Lyme, which gets its name from the Connecticut town where it was first identified, are found in nearly every state. The number of cases annually in 2005 and 2010 was about 330. From 2010 to 2018, it was nearly 500,000 a year. Bug off. Our recommended repellents listed below kept mosquitoes from biting for at least 5 hours and sometimes up to 8. Testers put their arm into cages containing hundreds of mosquitoes. Itchy yet? And let's run them down with DEET. Ben's Tick and Insect Repellent Wipes scored a 96. Ben's Tick and Insect Repellent Wilderness Formula Pump scored a 95. 3M Ultra Helen Insect Repellent Aerosol scored a 94. Off, Sportsman Deep Woods Insect Repellent 3 Aerosol scored a 93. Ben's Tick and Insect Repellent Wilderness Formula Aerosol scored an 88. Cutter Backwoods Insect Repellent Pump scored an 88. And Coleman Insect Repellent Ultra Dry Formula Aerosol scored an 86. Off Deep Woods Insect Repellent VIII Dry Aerosol scored an 86. And Solya Ultra 30 Insect Repellent Lotion scored an 84. All of those got really, really good high ratings. And then there was Repel Insect Repellent Sportsman Fund Dry Aerosol got a 76. And it also got a very good protection rating. And Picoridin, the Sawyer Premium Insect Repellent Pump at 83, was really the only one that got a very high rating. And Oil of Yulman Eucalyptus, there were two that got. Repel Lemon Eucalyptus Insect Repellent 2 Pump got a 90, and Cutter Lemon Eucalyptus Repellent Aerosol got an 82. And the cost per ounce ranged anywhere from a high of about $4.50 all the way down to 62 cents for one that didn't perform very well. But most of them are on a range anywhere from $1.25 to about $2.50. So they're not unreasonably expensive. Okay, this next article sounds pretty interesting. Travel Made Easier. And boy, they've got some pictures of beautiful places here. There's like a lake in the Alps with little houses around it, really pretty. Looks like a tram car, almost like a San Francisco car, but it looks like it's in Europe. An airport picture, two gentlemen sitting in a lounge in probably a hotel, an oriental boat was selling vegetables, probably in Hong Kong or maybe Vietnam, and a lady standing in front of an Eiffel Tower with a very delicious croissant in front of her face and big eyes like she's getting ready to take a huge bite. Ready to see the world again? Planning a trip is exciting and these days a little complicated. Sierra's Guide to Smarter, Safer Travel is the companion you need to make your dream vacation a stress-free reality. After two-plus years of stay-at-home orders and endless Zoom calls, Americans apparently can't wait to get out of Dodge. More than 87% currently have travel plans, with nearly 30% planning to travel outside the U.S., according to a recent survey from market research firm Destination Analysts. Consumer confidence is high, and there is strong pent-up demand, says Peter Vitalis, Executive Vice President of Partner Relations at Internova Travel Group, a travel services company. Also spurring this wanderlust is the recent easing of the COVID-19 restrictions. As of mid-June, it was becoming increasingly possible to travel internationally without having to worry about requirements such as pre-departure testing. That appears to be blunting the negative impact from a rise in prices for air and road travel. With more destinations opening up, for many of the biggest travel decisions involves from where can I go to where should I go first? Here's how to make these exciting decisions and how to plan the hassle-free, COVID-smart, completely amazing vacation you've been putting off for a long time. Four ways to save on flights. It's a tough time to get a good deal on a ticket thanks to surging fuel prices. Among other factors, prices are up a hefty 33% since last year. Still, these travel pro tricks can help you find the best deal. Book ahead and be flexible. There is no secret formula for getting great fares, says Scott Wehner, CEO of Fairness, a travel search and booking app that also tracks airfare trends. But if you can look at least a couple of weeks ahead, you start to get the best prices, he says. Look at the dates on either side of your ideal travel days. A shift of just a couple days can help you save. Shop around. Many carriers, from American Airlines to British Airways to Emirates, give you the option of locking in a fare for one or more days before you buy the ticket, either free or for a small fee. You can use the extra time to make sure you're not missing out on a better deal. Try a package. If your travel plans include a hotel stay, consider booking an air and hotel package to the airline or another booking site. The fare you'll get is often lower than what you'd pay if you get booked the ticket separately. BJ's Wholesale Club and Costco offer a variety of packages for members, typically with significant savings. Use price alerts. If your travel dates are flexible, set up a price alert to be notified when the fare drops on a given route. You can do this on many fare comparisons and booking sites on an apps including Hopper and Kayak. Planning and booking. Find your dream destination. Jazz and jambalaya in New Orleans? Whale watching in Maine? Grizzling and glaciers in Alaska? If you don't want the effort of international travel, you can slake your travel thirst right here in the U.S. and just outside the borders. You'll find Aztec ruins, mountain lakes, and white sand beaches in Mexico, Canada, and the Caribbean. And then there's Europe, or beyond. Whether you're dreaming of seeing the Vatican or river cruising down the Nile, your options range far wider than they have for the past 2 years. To find out which countries are open to travelers, check the State Department website at travel.state.gov. One caveat, ever-changing COVID-19 regulations mean this is probably not the time for destination hopping. Save yourself some stress and put off the Malta country tour for another year. Know before you go. Two U.S. government sites rank foreign countries by risk. The State Department emphasizes travel advisories ranging from exercise normal precautions to do not travel, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issue recommendations at cdc.gov. Wherever you go, travel with proof of vaccination and COVID-19 test results if necessary. Download any apps your destination country uses for uploading documents and contact tracing. Get expert help. Even if you've been booking by yourself online, the complexity of pandemic travel can make a travel agent, aka travel advisor, invaluable, says Erica Richter, a spokesperson for the American Society of Travel Advisors, for a price that might start at under $100 and go up based on the specifics and complexity of the trip, according to Richter. Your agent will do the planning and booking and offer support during the entire trip. These days, it's smart to turn to destination specialists, agents who have deep knowledge of the location you're heading to. They'll know which hotels, restaurants, and tours previous clients loved or hated, and set up bespoke experiences, a private tour of a French chateau, an after-hours museum visit, or an intimate dinner hosted by a local chef. Find a travel advisor by using a locator provided by the ASTA at travelsense.org. Travel expert Wendy Perrin offers a curated list of destination experts, the WOW list, at wendyperrin.com. You can also book your own trip, but researching online can be a time suck. It's a simple point-to-point jaunt, say a weekend in Vegas or a week at Disney. Booking through a site like Expedia or directly with the airline or hotel should be perfectly fine. You could also use the budget-friendly services of BJ's, Wholesale Club, Costco, and Sam Clubs, if you're a member. Consider a tour. The beauty of a prearranged tour is that once you've chosen and paid for the trip, all you have to do is show up and enjoy it. The tour operators handle all the arrangements, transportation, hotels, meals, sites, and more. Your option can include tours such as Adventures Abroad, 8-day tour of Portugal, in a group of up to 18 from $2,242 per person, plus airfare, and private tours with personalized itineraries like Kensington Tour's 8-day trip through Norway and the fjords, starting at $5,880 per person plus airfare. The extra cost of the latter gets you an experience tailored to your interests, and at Kensington at least, your choice of travel dates. Plus, you won't be grouped with strangers. Most tours require prepayment in full, with cancellation penalties, so do your research before paying up. A travel agent can help with booking the tour by vouching for the operator's reputation. It's a good idea to book with a tour company that is a member of the United States Tour Operators Association, says Diana Hecker, president of Detours Travel in Lawnsmart, New York, and asked these questions. Is the departure date guaranteed? Advertised departure dates can change. Some companies promise to honor a tour even if only a few people sign up. Others may switch dates or consolidate departures. How active is it? There's a tour for every fitness level and interest. Even sporty trips have a lot of variety. Backroads offer a challenging 4-day bike trip through Aspen's glacial valleys, and an easygoing e-bike tour of Washington's Willby Orchards and San Juan Islands, for example. You can use the activity level if you're browsing tours on an operator's website. Can I go solo? Almost all tours include a Zango single surcharge, typically 20% or more above the per-person double occupancy price. Some small group tours, Rhodes Scholars Renovation Retreat for Women in SoCal, California, is one or designed for solo travelers. Cruise carefully. Most cruise lines require negative COVID-19 tests before boarding and during the voyage. To see a color status dashboard that profiles ships by vaccination rates and reported cases, go to cdc.gov/quarantine/cruise. Smaller ships, such as used for the riverboat cruises offered through operators like Avalon Waterways and Viking, can be safer than those with 2,000-plus passengers. The trade-off for potentially reduced COVID-19 exposure is price. Large cruises offer lower rates based on their economies of scale. A Viking A.T. Chateau Rivers and Wine float through France from $24.99 plus airfare may have at most 190 passengers, but you won't find a swimming pool on board. A 6-day tour of the Eastern Caribbean from Miami aboard the 21-24-passenger Carnival Spirit from $905 for two plus airfare offers multiple eateries, pools, a spa, and even a mini-golf course. Make it accessible. Just because you're not able to climb the Alps doesn't mean you wouldn't love to marvel at their beauty in person, right? You can with the know-how of a travel advisor or tour operator that caters to the needs of older adults or those with mobility issues or other special needs. The ASTA's TravelSense.org website can help here, too. To find an advisor, click the button at the top right, then choose Senior, Mature Adult, or Accessible Special Needs under the Choose Your Journey type drop-down menu. Many tour operators offer accessible packages, including Adventures Abroad, Easy Access Travel, Elder Treks, Road Scholar, Senior Cycling, Travel for All, and Wheel of the World. Pick the right flights. Given the uncertainty of the pandemic travel, it may be worth paying more for fully refundable tickets. Airlines might not allow changes on basic economy tickets at all. And know that baggage seat and seat selection fees, around $30 one way, can also drop at the price of bargain economy tickets. Reduce travel day stress by booking early departures. Delays tend to cascade as the day wears on. And nonstop flights, or allowing plenty of time between connections. And download the airline's app so you can check in early for your flight, receive change alerts, and check tracked bags. Pre-book airport transfers. You can, of course, drive your car to your home airport and park for the duration of the trip. But if you factor in the driving time, the stress of sitting in traffic, and the fact that most airport parking is miles away from the terminal, it might not be worth the money you save. In many areas, you will find a range of shuttle vans or private cars to and from the airport. If you are landing in a foreign airport, you can often book a ride in advance and pay in U.S. dollars. At many major international airports, you can save money, $50 or more per person, by taking an airport bus into a downtown city depot where you can catch a cab or other local transportation to your final stop. Check in faster. Long lines are back at airport security and custom checkpoints, but you can avoid the queue. Enroll in the Department of Homeland Security's TSA pre-check programs, the express lane service for vetted U.S. travelers at U.S. airports, and the more comprehensive global entry, which gets you through immigration and custom in minutes. TSA PreCheck costs $85 for 5 years. Global Entry costs $100 and includes TSA PreCheck membership, also for 5 years. New members can apply by filling out a form at ttp.dhs.gov and arranging an in-person interview, often in an international airport or for TSA PreCheck at Staples and Identico locations around the country. Clear a private sector benefit using biometric identifiers such as facial scans has opened lanes at 43 U.S. airports where users cut to the head of the line at security checkpoints. Membership costs $189 a year, or less if you're a member of Delta or United's Frequent Flyer program, or have an American Express Platinum card. Tailor your trip. Want to learn to cook in Southeast Asia? Cruise along the Rhine. The best travel agents, tours, and cruises will help you find the right fit for your travel style. Ease your airport time. Some airports, Denver, Dallas, and Fort Worth, for example, getting from gerb to gate involves a lengthy trek. I know, I've been in both places. Even with moving walkways, you'll be logging a lot of steps. You don't have serious mobility issues to request in-airport assistance, such as a ride on a cart or in a wheelchair. Most airlines will let you arrange this free of charge during the booking process. You can also arrange for private airports concierge at certain airports. These services these companies provide as vary as do the prices. Global Airport Concierge, for example, offers 13 types of service at over 700 airports worldwide, including meet and assist for $75 and lounge facilitation for $35, as well as bagging handling and more. Layover between flights? You could spend it vying for a cramped seat at your next gate and craning your neck at the departure board for every few minutes. Or if you're flying on American Airlines or one of the company's partner airlines, you can relax in style at American Airlines Admiral's Club. There you'll find made-to-order scrambled eggs at breakfast and a slider bar at lunch, as well as other food, wine, and drinks. Free digital newspapers and magazines, shower suites, and a personal travel concierge to help if your plans hit a snafu. Other airline lounges for Air France, Delta, Virgin Atlantic, and others offer similar perks or better, and you won't necessarily need a business class ticket to gain entry. Some airline clubs may let you purchase a day pass for around $60. Ask your airline about price, or go to escapelounges.com to book a day for $40 to $45 as a Centurion Lounge, won by American Express at 40-plus locations around the world. Another option is an annual membership in Priority Pass, a network of more than 1,300 clubs at airports around the world, for $99 per year plus daily pass fees. Travel credit cards such as American Express Platinum, Capital One Venture, Chase Sapphire Reserve, and airline credit cards also offer access to airport lounges. How about a quick laughter of the free medicine? Nick's mother stops for a moment as her son reads the Bible to their cat. "Isn't that sweet?" she says. But an hour later, she hears a terrified racket. Running out of the door, she finds Nick trying to dunk the cat in a bucket of water. "Nick, what are you doing?" "I'm baptizing Muffy," he says. "But cats don't like to be in the water." "Well, then he shouldn't have joined my church." And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so much for listening.